Sangha conference call. Today we are fortunate to have our speaker, Gauranga Darshan Das Prabhuji. Prabhuji will enlighten us on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam and Katanya Chaturanga. And but before we listen to Prabhuji, we would really, really Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dhamma Pranam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. We thank you so much for giving your valuable time and association to us this morning and enlightening on this very important topic. But before we do so, we would like to I would like to hand over the call to Tiffany Mataji to give you a brief introduction. Thank you, Tiffany Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhupada Mataji. Hare Krishna, dear devotees. His Grace Gauranga Darshan Das is a disciple of His Holiness Radhanath Swami and is an Associate Dean of Academic Affairs of the Bhaktivedanta Vidyapith Research Center at Govardhan Eco Village. He is a member of the ISKCON Board of Examinations. He holds a master's degree from the Indian Institute in Bangalore. He teaches Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Vaishnav character courses at the Govardhan Eco Village and at several other places in India. Gauranga Darshan Das has written several books, including Gita Subodhini, Bhagavata Subodhini, Chaitanya Subodhini, Disapproved but Not Disowned, Bhagavata Pravaha, and Gita, the Jewel Box. He has a special fondness for reciting and meditating scriptural verses and has compiled shloka books, namely Gita Ratnamala, Bhagavata Ratnamala, Chaitanya Ratnamala, and Bhagavata Tattvamala. He also runs a free monthly e-magazine called Bhagavata Pradipika and regularly writes educational and devotional articles that also appear in Back to Godhead Magazine International and in multiple Indian language editions. He is known for his lucid spiritual talks with captivating visuals and also presentations that give a bird's eye view of an entire book or section. So far, he has delivered over 4,500 hours of spiritual discourses. He has guided several students in their Shastric study. He also oversees deity worship at the Govardhan Eco Village. So Hare Krishna, welcome to the call, Prabhuji. Thank you for your association. Hare Bol.
Hare Krishna. So shall we start?
Yes, Prabhuji.
The shloka, the fifth canto, some shloka, can someone show it?
Yeah, they can share.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 2nd chapter, 8th shloka. बाणाविमौ भगवतः शतपत्रपत्रौ शान्ताव अपुंखरुचिराव इति तिक्मदन्तौ कस्मै व्युनंक्षि व्युनंक्षसिवने विचिरन्न विद्मः क्षेमाय नो जडधियां तव विक्रमोस्तु. सो दिस श्लोक इज कमिंग इन द फिफ्थ कैंटो. आई थिंक दिस इज अग्निध्र एपिसोड. Banav, two arrows. So I'll just read the translation and purport. Then Agnidhara observed the glancing eyes of Purvachiti and said, my dear friend, you have two very beautiful arrows, namely your glancing eyes. These arrows have feathers like the petals of a lotus flower. Although they have no shafts, they are very beautiful and they have very sharp piercing points. They appear very peaceful, and thus it seems that they will not be shot by anyone. You must be loitering in this forest to shoot these arrows at someone, but I cannot understand whom. My intelligence is dull and I cannot combat you. Indeed, no one can equal you in prowess, and therefore I pray that your prowess will be for my good fortune. Agnidra thus began appreciating Purvachiti's powerful glance upon him, he compared her eyes to very sharp arrows, although her eyes were as beautiful as lotuses. They were simultaneously like shaftless arrows, and Agnidra was therefore afraid of them. He hoped that her glances upon him would be favorable because he was already captivated, and the more captivated he became, the more impossible it would be for him to remain without her. Agnidra therefore prayed to Purvachitti that her glances at him would be auspicious, not futile. In other words, he prayed that she would become his wife. So this Agnidra is the son of Priyavrata Maharaj. Priyavrata Maharaj was the son of Swayambhu Manu. So Swayambhu Manu had 5 children, 2 sons, Priyavrata and Uttanapad, and 3 daughters, Akuti, Prasuti and Devahuti. So in the 4th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Maitreya Muni describes the lineage of our Devahuti. And in the beginning of the 5th canto of Bhagavatam, Maitreya Muni describes the lineage of Akuti and Prasuti. And from the 4th canto, 8th chapter till the end, he describes the dynasty of Uttanapada Maharaj. And 5th canto begins with the description of Priyavrata Maharaj. So that's the context of the 5th canto. So 5th canto, 1st chapter till 15th chapter, it's all a description of the dynasty of Priyavrata Maharaj. The first chapter describes Priyavrata Maharaj's story, and second chapter, Priyavrata's first son Agnidhra's story. Third chapter, Agnidhra's first son Nabhi Maharaj's story. And fourth chapter onwards, we have Nabhi's son Rishabhadev's story. Fourth, fifth and sixth chapters are Rishabhadev's pastimes and teachings. And Rishabhadev's first son was Bharat Maharaj. And he had 3 lives: King Bharat, Dear Bharat and Jada Bharat. So these 3 lives and his teachings as Jada Bharat are described from 5th canto, 7th chapter till 14th chapter. And 15th chapter describes remaining other descendants. Just their names are given, their stories are not given. So this is a quick outline of the 5th canto, first half of Bhagavatam. That is a part of the description of dynasties. So now in this current shloka, we see that Agnidhra is very much attracted to Purvachitti. Actually, Agnidhra's birth happened in a little peculiar manner. So at the time of conceiving Agnidhra, Priyavrata Maharaj was little lusty. So because Priyavrata was little lusty, he conceived a son who also had an inclination which is not very purely devotional. Priyavrata is definitely a great devotee. But Agnidhra developed an inclination to go to the planet of ancestors, Pitruloka Kama. So that word comes in the 5th canto somewhere, in the 2nd chapter somewhere. So why did Agnidhra develop this kind of inclinations? Because his parents were a little lusty while conceiving him. So the consciousness of the parents will influence the children who are born. So the consciousness or the mindset that the parents keep at the time of conceiving the child will be transferred to the child. Or in another sense, the fact is, different souls who are meant to take birth in this material bodies, in this material world, have certain mentalities. So they are attracted to those parents who have similar mentalities, right? So they would attract that kind of people. If they are in good consciousness, they might attract a devotee. If they are in poor consciousness, they might attract a demonic person. So like that. So parents' mistakes or good deeds will definitely influence the kind of progeny that parents are going to get. Now you see, Diti united with Kashyapa Muni at a wrong time, at Sandhya time. So she got Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, two great demons as her sons. So now you see, Agnidhra got this, Priyavrata Maharaj got this Agnidhra as his son, who was not aspiring for some pure spiritual goals, but he was aspiring to go to Pitruloka Kama, Pitruloka. So now this Agnidhra goes to a forest, goes to a hill. That name must be somewhere, I don't remember. So he goes to a hill and starts worshipping Lord Brahma. Instead of worshipping Vishnu or Krishna, he starts worshipping Brahma. So Brahma understood the mentality of Agnidhara. He was desiring to go to Pitraloka and he was desiring a wife who can give him some children, who can do the necessary ritual so that Agnidhara can be in Pitraloka. So understanding the desire in Agnidhara to get a suitable wife for attaining his goals or his desires, Brahma sends Purvachitti, the best of some heavenly damsels in his area. So Brahma sends Purvachitti. And this Agnidhara goes to that mountain specifically with a desire to get a wife and worship Brahma. And he also is aware that this is the place where some heavenly damsels come. Okay. Now, for example, you are chanting and somehow you could not complete your chanting in the morning. There are some rounds left. So you go to some peaceful place and then chant. So one will not purposefully go to a place where there are 100 distractions and then chant. He won't be able to complete the rounds only. So now he is going to do some tapasya, but he specifically chose a place where demigoddesses are like great heavenly damsels or apsaras. So they would come and stroll. So the place is known for it. Still he went there. So now Agnidhara went there and then started doing tapasya. So now his intentions are very clear. Brahma understood. But Agnidhara is worshipping Brahma sincerely. So Brahma is obliged to fulfill the desires of Agnidhara. So he had sent this Purvachitti. And Agnidhara saw this Purvachitti, and because of his bewilderment, he started addressing Purvachitti as if he were a boy. Oh my lord, he says, oh my lord, oh great seas. And then he will slowly recognize that this Purvachitti is a girl, not a boy. So like that, he was a little bewildered, confused, and he became very much attracted, lusty also. So now in this current shloka that we just read, he is appreciating her glances. And the glances that come out of her two eyes, he is comparing them with arrows. Okay. And there's a lot of poetic description. And this is also a kind of flattery to impress the opposite gender. So he does all that. And this Agnidhara, specifically, Prabhupada says in the purport, towards the last lines of the purport, Prabhupada says that Agnidhara is basically proposing to Purvachitti to so that she becomes his wife. So that's the proposal, basically. In the later verses also, in the previous verses also, these intentions are clearly seen. Just in few verses, Sukadeva Goswami concludes this story and then he says that Purvachitti and Agnidhara married, and through them, they got 9 powerful sons headed by Nabhi. So now Agnidhara, just like Priyavrata Maharaj has divided this entire Bhumandala into 7 oceans and 7 islands. Similarly, Nabhi also divided his kingdom into 9 parts. Now you have this Bhumandala with 7 oceans and 7 islands. And the middlemost island is Jambudvipa. It is circular in shape. And there is a saltwater ocean around that Jambudvipa, which is in the shape of a ring. And beyond that, there is Plakshadvipa, which is also in the shape of a ring. Like that, there are so many concentric circles or rings. So the island and the ocean, both are in ring shapes with a bigger radius as we go from the innermost island to the outermost island. But the middlemost island is circular in shape. That is called Jambudvipa, which is very small. And that Jambudvipa is given to Agnidhara to rule. And this Jambudvipa is divided into 9 parts. So these 9 parts are called 9 Varshas. And these 9 Varshas, Varsham is a tract of land. These 9 Varshas are separated by big mountain ranges. So in the 5th canto, 2nd half, you see the calculations and names and dimensions of all these mountains and islands and different kinds of rivers that flow there. So now Nadi got Agnidhara got 9 sons through Purvachitti, and he gave the 9 varshas of Jambudvipa to these 9 sons. And the eldest son, Nadi, got this kingdom of Bharatavarsha. And from there, the lineage of Bharatavarsha, people comes. So this is the story of Agnidhara. Now, coming specifically to the current purport and current shloka, which is mainly centered on the attraction between a male and female on a material plane, on a bodily plane. Now, you see, Agnidhara saw this lady, Purvachitti, and he was attracted. So, attraction between male and female is quite natural for a person who is embodied within a material body, which is made of earth, water, fire, and ether. So, this whole world is called Maithunyagara, because it's running because of this desire to associate with the opposite gender. And unless one is extremely self-controlled and very pure and uncontaminated in one's character and devotion, one will get easily distracted by these sensual desires as soon as one comes in contact with the opposite gender. So one needs to be very careful, and there are several rules and regulations prescribed in terms of men and women associating in the Vedic culture. So now, specifically in this current shloka, the glances of Purvachitti are glorified. Agnidhara is trying to flatter Purvachitti, and he is glorifying Purvachitti's glances so much. So through glances, through the eyes, the arrows of glances will come and pierce the hearts of the opposite gender. When a boy sees a girl, when a girl sees a boy, especially in young age, so their glances will attract each other's hearts, and that will create a tight knot between them, relationship. One thing is there, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that he is a bona fide union of men and women. If it is bona fide under a marriage tie, and attraction is natural, but that natural attraction has to be channelized with certain regulations of Vedic culture and Vedic scriptures and scriptural prescriptions and prohibitions. And through the sacred bonding of marriage, they can come together, they can live, they can stay together for the purpose of procreating Krishna conscious children and raising them in a Krishna conscious way, thus increasing the population of the earth, and also taking some responsibility of raising this population in a very devotional way, spiritual way. So all these are, it's a part of this creation. So creation means creation has to be filled with population. Population needs men and men, women to come together and produce more and more people. So that's how the creation began. So Brahma's right, the first project of Brahma is to populate the universe. So he created 4 kumaras and said, you marry and you create children. They said no. Then he created Shiva, and Shiva took up the project, but he created people who are very fierce in nature, and they started destroying everything because he is known for destruction, right? The person who is expert in destruction should not be employed in creation. So that Shiva could not effectively do that service. Then Brahma created 10 sages, and he told them, you procreate and then increase the population of this universe. But sages are sages. They cannot increase the population so much. So after that, Brahma was contemplating, and he, through his contemplation, through his sincere desire to serve the Lord by populating the universe, a couple manifested, Swayambhu Manu and Shatarupa. And through their union, these 5 children, Akuti, Prasuti, Devahuti, Uttanapad, Parivartha, they came, and through them, the universe got populated. So now, male and female attraction is natural, and they're coming together under the Vedic marriage ties for noble purposes is bona fide, and especially our household life of Kardama Muni and Devahuti is considered ideal and it is glorified in Srimad Bhagavatam. So that way it's bona fide. But what is problem with this this meeting of men and women or union of men and women is undue unrestricted indulgence in sense gratification on a bodily platform. And if that becomes the priority of coming together, then such kind of things are condemned within Shastras, right? So Prabhupada says that Purvachitti's glances attracted. So these glances are, they are like arrows that pierce the heart of the opposite gender. And through that, this Cupid inspires people to come together. There is one purport in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. That is when Krishna is touring Mathura. So when Krishna, little boy, 10 and a half year old boy, first time he came to Mathura. He came out of Vrindavan. And he was surrounded by all other cowherd boys, and Balaramji also was there. He was touring the city of Mathura. Then all the Mathura Vasis were seeing Krishna, and Krishna was seeing Mathura Vasis. And especially the ladies of Mathura, they got attracted to Krishna. So Cupid, because they saw Krishna, they were attracted to Krishna because Krishna is so beautiful. Nityam nirikshamanana medapi dvarakaukasam navitripyanti hidrusha shriyo dhamanangamachyutam. Krishna is so beautiful, and all the Mathura Vasis were attracted to him, and specifically women developed some conjugal attraction. Although Krishna is a 10-year-old boy, he looks like a 15-year-old boy. He's like more grown up, 15, 16-year-old boy. So all the women were attracted. So attraction begins with eyes, seeing the form of the opposite gender. So Cupid's attraction or Cupid's influence on people in this world is in 10 stages. One is Chakshuraga. If someone can open that purport, it will be easy. It is the 10th canto, I think 43rd chapter, 14th purport, you can try. 44 and 14 shloka. Shloka number is 14. Chapter number is 44. Huh? Okay, you can try this. Not this. Then you see 43. Or 42 you can try. 42, 14. 10.42.14. Shloka number is 14 for sure. So basically in this purport, we see that the acharyas describe 10. This is the shloka, correct. The sight of Krishna aroused Cupid in the hearts of the city women. Thus agitated, they forgot themselves. Their clothes, braids and bangles become disheveled, and they stood as still as figures in a painting. Here Chakravartipad says this. Now you see Chakshuraga, first stage in which a Cupid attracts people in this world is Chakshuraga. Means through eyes, through glances, there is attraction. Attraction expressed through eyes. First contact with essential object happens through eyes. Next is Chittasangaha. Chittasangaha means intense attachment created in the mind. So this lust need not be for specifically for sensual enjoyment of the opposite gender. It could be for any material object. So a person is just walking on the street and he sees some nice product or some shirt or some dress in the showroom. So that is Chakshuraga. So there is an attraction created through the eyes. Next is Chittasanga. In the mind, there is an intense attachment towards that object, and that happens through eyes. So Chakshuraga is attraction through eyes. Chittasanga is intense attachment created in the mind. Third is Sankalpa. Sankalpa means a determination to attain that object, a determination to associate with that beautiful girl or boy. Nidra Chedaha. When the determination increases, one cannot sleep properly. That is fourth stage. Fifth stage is Tanuta. Tanuta means becoming very thin, emaciated. Sixth stage is Vishayanivritti, means they lose interest in everything else. We see this in certain movies also, Vishayanivritti. Then seventh stage is Trapayanashaha. People become very shameless also. They can even openly express their love and desire for the other person, even publicly, Trapayanashaha. Then eighth, Unmada means madness. And Murcha means becoming fainted. People become fainted, stunned. And tenth stage is Mriti, death. So these are the 10 stages in which Cupid makes a fool out of materialistic people, conditioned souls. So now you can close this purport. So Cupid's influence is very much there in our material world. So because of Cupid's arrows, the men and women get attracted to each other, and this happens in 10 stages. Now, the first stage is Chakshuraga. If one can restrict one's eyes, like from seeing some objects that are unfavorable for our spiritual advancement, one can avoid a lot of difficulties in spiritual life. So now, a bona fide marriage tie is fine, perfect. It's approved by Vedic scriptures. But beyond that, unnecessary, undue, unrestricted engagement or an interaction with opposite gender is not needed. So one can just kind of restrict one's eyes, chakshuragaha. Then one's eyes are restricted, other 9 stages will not follow. Chitta sangha will not be there. Sankalpa will not be there. Then nidra cheda, all these other stages will not follow. So first, out of sight, out of mind. So in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam also, there is one sloka, Krishna directly says in Uddhava Gita, to Uddhava. He says that to protect oneself from sensual allurements, one needs to first restrict one's eyes. Now the whole purport today that we read, or the sloka that we read, is about the eyes. So this Agnidhara saw Purvachiti with his eyes, and he exposed himself to the arrows that are coming out of her eyes, her glances. So we need to understand that one's distractions will begin from eyes. Of course, distraction can begin through any sense for that matter, but eyes are very powerful, and they are like the main gates or doors for any sensual impressions to enter the mind or the heart. So out of sight, out of mind. We generally meditate on those sense objects which we have seen or contacted very recently. If we have not interacted with a sense object in the recent past, definitely that will not come into our mind. For example, if I ate some halwa 25 years back, and since 25 years I have not seen halwa, I have not heard about halwa, I have not eaten halwa, so today I won't be missing halwa. But since 25 years, if I have a habit, regular habit of eating halwa on a daily basis, today if I don't get it, I will miss that in my meal. So mind's nature is to meditate on the recent sense objects. So the recent interactions with sense objects, what we have seen very recently, what we have come in contact with very recently, they have a greater influence on our mind. So if we understand that some sense object is unfavorable for our spiritual advancement, one needs to be conscious enough and smart enough and diligent enough to minimize or avoid contact with that unfavorable sense object. Right? Chakshuraga. So it all begins with eyes. So, but eyes have a propensity to see some beautiful objects. So when a beautiful boy or girl is just walking, then it's natural for eyes to look in the direction. But how do we fulfill the propensities of this eyes to see beautiful objects? Bhagavatam prescribes several times in several cantos that one has to use one's eyes to see the beautiful form of Krishna. Otherwise, the arrows of Cupid that come through the glances of the opposite gender will affect the person. For a man, woman is distraction. For a woman, man is distraction, right? As long as they are in material bodies. So, of course, on a spiritual plane, everybody is same. Everybody is a spirit soul. Everybody is a part and parcel of Krishna. Everybody is a fragmental part of Krishna, spiritual in nature, Satchidananda for that matter. But as long as those souls, spirit souls, are there within this material body, we need to acknowledge the differences between the material bodies and maintain respectful and safe distance, right? Now, how do we protect ourselves from the allurement sensual attractions that begin with eyes? First, we need to use our eyes to see the beautiful form of Krishna. Asam hare ravanata khile lokati vraham shokashru sagara visoshana matyudharam sammohanaya rachitam nijamaya yasya bhrumandalam nikrute makarandhajasyam. Hasam hare avanata akhila loka tivra shoka ashru sagara visoshana matyudharam. So by seeing the beautiful, enchanting, charming smile of Krishna, the ocean of tears that is created by the lamentation of the conditioned soul can be dried up. That's the effect of seeing the smile of Krishna. Second point in this shloka is sammohanaya rachitam nijamaya yasya bhrumandalam nikrite makaradhvajasya. If one sees the beautiful eyebrows of Krishna, so what is the effect of Krishna's eyebrows? So Krishna's eyebrows are like bows. So from bow, arrow will come, right? So Krishna's eyebrows are like bows, and the arrows that are coming from those bows are Krishna's glances. So basically, one has to use one's eyes to see the eyebrows of Krishna and the eyes of Krishna, and expose oneself to the arrows that are coming from Krishna's eyes. Then we can protect ourselves from the arrows of Cupid, right? So, sammohanaya rachitam nijamaya yasya bhrumandalam nikrite makaradhvaja. So, this Cupid is always holding some bow and arrow, flower arrows, and then just always throwing arrows on people in this world. That's how lust is created. But now, how can Krishna relieve us from lust? Because he is never affected by lust. You may say that Krishna has 16,108 queens. He has unlimited number of gopis in Vrindavan. And he has unlimited Lakshmis in Vaikuntha, right, in his various forms as Vishnu or Narayana. So how can you say that he is not lusty? Yes, he is not lusty. Because although Krishna is served by so many gopis or so many queens of Dwaraka, Krishna is attracted to their pure hearts and their service attitude and their devotional service rather than their external feminine attributes. So there is a beautiful shloka in the first canto of Bhagavatam. Uddhava bhava pishunama tuhasam vridavaloka nihato madano piyasam sammuhya chapama jahat pramadottavasta yasyendriyam vimathitum kuhakairna sekuhum uddama bhava pishunama laval guhasa. All the queens of Dwaraka are so beautiful. They have such high grade feminine attributes. Uddama bhava, they have grave expressions. Pishuna amalaval guhasa, their smiles are so charming and very captivating, spotless. Guhasa vridavaloka, their sidelong glances are so powerful. Vridavaloka nihato madanopiyasam. Madana is Cupid. So even Cupid also gets agitated by seeing the queens of Krishna in Dwaraka, right? They can attract even Cupid. Cupid is considered very beautiful. But even he also will lose his patience, right? And it could be amadanopiyasam. Means even Shiva also, Shiva is known to be Dhira. Even Shiva also gets captivated. So that's the greatness of the beauty of the queens of Krishna. Sammuhya chapamaja hat pramadottamasta. Seeing this pramadottama, the best queens of Krishna, sammuhya chapam, this Cupid gives up his bow and arrow. He's frustrated. No, I don't want to keep this bow and arrow with me anymore. Why? Because as we were discussing sometime back, any attraction between male and female in this material world is instigated by the arrows of Cupid. But when he comes to Dwaraka, when he sees Krishna and the queens of Dwaraka, they are already attracted to each other without the Cupid shooting any arrows, right? Because Krishna is the original Cupid. He is the father of Cupid. So he is more enchanting than Cupid. So why would they need Cupid for their conjugal pastimes? So Cupid becomes frustrated. I have no role here. I have no role here in bringing Krishna and his queens together. That's why he just gives up the bow. Means material Cupid has no role in the conjugal pastimes of Krishna. Means there is no scope for materialist in the conjugal pastimes of Krishna. Because Krishna is not materially lusty, if we take shelter of Krishna, if we worship Krishna, we will also not be affected by lust. That's what Bhagavatam teaches us. So, to protect oneself from arrows of Cupid, we need to take shelter of that person who can even attract Cupid. Krishna is called Madana Mohana and Radharani is called Madana Mohana Mohini. So Krishna can attract even Cupid and Radharani can attract even Krishna. So Krishna is Madana Mohan. We have to take shelter of Madana Mohan. He is our Sambandha Vigraha. So Chaitanya Charitamrita says that in the beginning stages of devotional service, to establish one's Sambandha or connection with Krishna, one has to worship Madana Mohan first. Because the initial stages of devotional service, the Cupid, one is not very much self-controlled. One is very young and very new. So if one takes shelter of Madan Mohan, so the distractions of Cupid, distractions caused by Cupid are removed by Madan Mohan, so that one's Sambandha can be established nicely, then they can proceed in their path of devotional service. So Krishna can attract even Cupid. So the solution to save oneself from the arrows of Cupid is to take shelter of Krishna. Krishna will deal with the Cupid, right? So this in the South India, there is this Suprabhatam, Balaji, in Venkateswara, Suprabhatam is there. In that there is one shloka. Kandarpadarpaharasundara divyamurte kanta kucham malalola drishte కళ్యాణ నిర్మల గుణాకర దివ్య కీర్తే శ్రీ వెంకటాచలపతే తవ సుప్రభాతం కందర్ప దర్ప హర సుందర దివ్య మూర్తే కందర్ప దర్ప కందర్ప ఇస్ క్యూపిడ్ దర్ప ఇస్ హిస్ ప్రైడ్ సో క్యూపిడ్ హ్యాస్ గ్రేట్ ప్రైడ్ దట్ హీ సో బ్యూటిఫుల్ అండ్ హీ కెన్ అట్రాక్ట్ అదర్ పీపుల్ హీ కెన్ ఈవెన్ ఇండ్యూస్ పీపుల్ విత్ లస్టీ డిజైర్స్ హీస్ వెరీ ప్రౌడ్ కందర్ప దర్ప హర సుందర దివ్యమూర్తి కృష్ణ సుందర దివ్యమూర్తి హీ ఈజ్ సో బ్యూటిఫుల్ దట్ హీ కెన్ ఎంచాంట్ ఈవెన్ క్యూపిడ్ అండ్ హీ కెన్ స్టీల్ ద ప్రైడ్ హీ కెన్ సబ్డ్యూ ద ప్రైడ్ దర్ప హర దట్స్ వై హీస్ కాల్డ్ హరి సో నౌ ఫర్ అస్ టు సేవ్ వన్ సెల్ఫ్ ఫ్రమ్ ఆల్ దిస్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ లస్ట్ ఆర్ సెన్సువల్ డిస్ట్రాక్షన్స్ ఆర్ క్యూపిడ్స్ యారోస్ వన్ నీడ్స్ టు go to that person who can humble Cupid, who can distract Cupid. So Brahma Samhita goes one step ahead. Actually, one crore steps ahead. And Brahma Samhita says, Kandarpa kotika maniya visesha shobham govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Kandarpa kotika maniya visesha shobham. Because Krishna is more attractive than even millions of Cupids. Koti is once year. 1 crore, 10 lakhs. But koti can be multiple crores also. So even if millions and trillions of Cupids come also, they cannot compare with the beauty of Krishna. So one's inclination to see beauty should be satisfied by seeing the beauty of Krishna. So taking darshan of the Supreme Lord Krishna will protect us from the allurements of Maya. And now, in the current shloka, we see that Purvachiti is attracting Agnidhra through her glances, through her alluring glances. But Agnidhra got into a bona fide household life with her. and then begot 9 children. They became the rulers of this Jambudvipa, and later he had his other later destinations and all that. So it's the case is, although there are a lot of lessons on lust that we can learn from this episode, overall it's ultimately led to a bona fide marriage, right? But of course, he also, after the departure of Purvachitti, also his enjoyment propensity continued, and then he somehow managed to reach Hariloka. That is also there, apart from bona fide household life. Because now there are several episodes in Srimad Bhagavatam where very serious lessons are given, where one could get attracted by the opposite gender unrestrictedly and beyond certain limits, and that becomes a great distraction in spiritual life. So there is this episode of Pururava in the 9th canto of Bhagavatam. So this Pururava became attracted to Urvasi. And Urvasi gave a lot of counseling to Pururava also. You behave yourself, relax, you should not, you are an emperor. You are not supposed to be behaving like this so restlessly. So although Urvasi herself gave a lot of counseling and advice to Pururava, Pururava was quite infatuated and obsessed with her. So he attained Gandharva planet and enjoyed with her for a long time. But after that, he was frustrated. So he again came back and then he realized, and he sang this Aila Gita, and he realized that, oh, it's not worth it. So even Kapiladev says in the third canto of Bhagavatam, when he's teaching his mother Devahuti, he said, Tat srishta srishta srishteshu konma khandita dhikuman rishim narayana mrute yoshit mayyeva mayaya. Except this Narayana Rishi, who else can protect oneself from the allurement of opposite gender? So, like that, there are so many episodes within Srimad Bhagavatam that speak to us the importance of protecting oneself from this lusty desires. Even in Bhagavad Gita also, in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that tamayesha krodhayesha rajoguna samudbhavaha mahashano mahapapma vidhi yena iha vairinam. The greatest degrading enemy for every conditioned soul in this material world is lust. Kama yesha krodha yesha rajoguna samudbhava. Kama is born out of lust, and when that kama is not fulfilled, then it becomes krodha. It's not necessarily for sensual enjoyment, it could be any material desire. The kama basically means desire. So where is this kama located? Krishna even says in Bhagavad Gita, third chapter, somewhere in that series, Krishna says, kama yesha krodha yesha rajoguna samudbhava mahashano mahapapma vidhiyena iha vairina. In that series, he also says that lust covers the living entities. Yeah, this sloka. After this, you can open the next sloka. Yeah. Dhumena vriyate vahinir. In this, he says that fire is covered by smoke. Mirror is covered by dust. Embryo is covered by womb. So similarly, lust covers living entities, and the coverings of these three. Now fire covers smoke. Although smoke is covering fire, still fire is glowing and you are able to perceive fire, or at least you are able to perceive the effect of fire, right? So the covering of lust on a human being is minimal, supposed to be minimal at least. And mirror covered by dust, if dust is there on the mirror too much, a thick layer of dust is there, you can't see your reflection properly, but still you can faintly see some reflection. So this lust covers animals in a moderate manner, right? But when embryo is covered by the womb, nobody can interact with the child, nobody can see the child, even a faint reflection also you can't see, you can't hear the child also. So the lust's covering on very low beings is very high, right? So yeah, you can close this. In this context, I remember one more thing from the fifth canto. Now you see, the lowest beings, people, living entities who are very poor in their consciousness, means they are very high in their lust. So there, the procreation rate and reproduction rate is very high. Now you see, some reptiles or snakes or very low insects, their lust is so high, and when in one pregnancy they can produce 100 eggs or 1,000 eggs, and they all will become little insects or living entities or small snakes or whatever. So the lust levels are so high there, and pregnancy rate is high there, and reproduction rate is also so high. So in when the consciousness is very low, and come to little higher beings, animals, say dogs or pigs. So their consciousness is little better compared to that very low grade insects. So there also lust is there, but it's a little reduced. So pregnancy rate reduced, reproduction rate reduced. So in one pregnancy, a dog may give birth to some 10-12 puppies. A pig may give birth to some 10-12 piglets, right? Not hundreds, right? So now lust is little reduced. And when it comes to human beings, pregnancy is there once in a year. And in one pregnancy, there is only one child, not 10-12, or sometimes rarely there are twins, but otherwise one child, one pregnancy, once in a year. So that is the rate. So lust is quite reduced. Now I was speaking about Jambudvipa. So in Jambudvipa, this Bharata Varsha is inhabited by so many human beings, but the remaining 8 Varshas are considered Bhoomaswarga, or they are considered heaven on earth. It's there in Bhumandala plane only, but still they are very heavenly Varshas. There is a lot of facility, there is long lifetime. So for them, there is pregnancy once in a lifetime. So in the last year of their life, they will give birth to a child and then they will die. So as consciousness increases, consciousness becomes better, lust decreases, then union decreases, the pregnancy rate decreases, reproduction rate decreases. If you go to Vaikuntha, now we are coming from lower species to little higher species, let's go to Vaikuntha directly. In Vaikuntha, there is definitely interaction between men and women, but there is no lust, no sense gratification, no pregnancy, no reproduction. They are constantly absorbed in glorifying Krishna. Now you see, in the third canto of Bhagavatam, 15th chapter, 17th shloka, the shloka says, Vaimanika salalana ascharitani shashvat gayanti yatra shamalakshapanani bhartuhum antarjalenu vikasan madhumadhavinam gandhena khandita dhiyopyanilam kshipantaham vaimanika salalana charitani shashvat. All these Vaikunthavasis, they have their private airplanes with their consorts right next to them. Vaimanika salalanas charitani shashvat. And what are they doing? Traveling with their consorts in their private airplanes, not sense gratification. They are just doing Krishna katha, gayanti. They are just singing the glories of Lord Hari, right? And gayanti yatra shamalaha kshapanani bhartuhu antarjale anubikasan madhumadhavinam. There are beautiful Madhu Madhavi flowers that are blooming in the water reservoirs of Vaikuntha. And that fragrance is coming to the nostrils of Vishnu Parshadas who are traveling in airplanes. Now there are fragrant flowers on the earth in some lake or in some river. When they are traveling in airplane, will it come there? No, but in Vaikuntha it happens. Because they are not in a closed aluminum airplane with a seat belt there. So they are just open. So they can see the sky, they can see everything. But they are even not even getting inclined to enjoy the fragrance that is coming from the Madhu Madhavi flowers. They are so absorbed in glorification of Krishna. Gandhera khandita dhiyopyanilam kshipantaha. So they just condemn that fragrance. And another shloka also says, यत् संकुलं हरिपदानति मात्र दृष्टैर् वैदुर्य मारकत हेममयैर्विमानैः येषां बृहत्कटितटास्मित शोभिमुख्य कृष्णात्मनं नरज आदधुर्स्मयाद्यैः यत् संकुलं हरिपदानति मात्र दृष्टैर् because their minds are totally captivated by their love for Krishna, Lord, love for Lord Hari. Haripadanati matra drishti, their entire drishti, their entire focus and concentration is there only on the lotus feet of Lord Hari. Right? Vaidurya marakata hemamayar vimanaihi. Although they are traveling in such beautiful golden airplanes that are bedecked with very costly gems, vaidurya marakata and all this, still, and they are also accompanied by beautiful consorts. Yesham brahatkati tata smita shobhimukhya. They are accompanied by very beautiful consorts. But Krishnatmanam, their minds are absorbed in Krishna. Na raja adadhurus. So because they are absorbed in Krishna, raja, passionate desires for sense gratification will not enter their mind. Basically, high consciousness means absorption in Krishna katha without any lust. Lowest consciousness means too much of lust and too much of reproduction, too much of sense gratification. So as lust increases, consciousness degrades. So increasing of consciousness means improving one's consciousness, Krishna consciousness, goes parallel with reduction of lusty desires. And in that series of Bhagavad Gita shlokas, let's go back to that Bhagavad Gita third chapter, shlokas, we were discussing about smoke and all that, right? Can somebody open? Dhumena vriyate vahini. After that, Krishna says, where is lust located? He says that lust is located in different places. Okay, next. You can go to the next shloka. Not this one. The senses, the mind and the intelligence are the sitting places of lust. Indriyani manobuddhir asya adhishtanam uchyati etair vimohayatyesha jnanam avritya dehinam. So jnanam avritya, people may have jnana, knowledge, but the jnanam is avritya, the jnanam is covered by lust. So the senses, the mind and intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Now out of these three, where do we deal first? So now intelligence may be there. Now we can close this. Now Krishna says that lust is there in senses, mind and intelligence. Now, everybody has this basic intelligence or common sense that, oh, if I become very lusty or very passionate, it is not good for my spiritual life or even material life also, too much of distraction, okay? Although this intelligence is there, jnanam avritya, lust will cover their intelligence, right? An intelligent person may not be able to control the lust, right? Although he has intelligence. So one has to have purity by one's practice of devotional service. Now intelligence most people have, many people have at least, okay? But intelligence, mind and senses. Now where will the mind get the impressions of lust? Through senses. So through senses, so many material objects we see. Eyes will see some beautiful object, ears will hear some pleasant music, nose will smell some sweet fragrance, tongue will taste some delicious dishes, and our hands, skin may touch some soft objects, right? So like that, through senses, mind stores so many impressions, right? So lust is stored in senses, mind and intelligence, all three. Now senses are the main gates, right? It's the first contact, right? So we get a lot of sensual impressions. The experience of senses with the sense objects will create so many impressions within the mind, right? So now thus mind and senses contain lust. Now intelligence is there. You must sharpen the intelligence by hearing some moral principles or even some scriptural recommendations, prescriptions or prohibitions. But when the mind is constantly being bombarded through the impressions that it gathers through senses, intelligence becomes weak, right? So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita and the later shlokas in that series only, begin with senses. You want to control lust? First, begin with senses. Control the senses first. So stop feeding the mind. Your senses 5, mind 1, and intelligence is 1. So intelligence is quite weak, right? When somebody is not very advanced, they're pure, intelligence becomes weak. So now first stop these 5 senses. First restrict these 5 senses and the mind will not get inputs. Then parallelly start sharpening the intelligence. Then one day one will be able to control the lust. So it begins with, of course, all lust which is sitting at all 3 places, intelligence, mind and senses must be controlled. But first attempt to control lust begins with controlling the senses. So one may try to eat certain foods. One may try to avoid certain foods. That could be one way of controlling, right? One element of controlling. So now somebody may avoid going to certain places, right? Where a lot of sensual impressions are there. So like that, the senses have to be restricted and the mind's inputs that comes through the senses will be minimized. And parallelly, you sharpen your intelligence by studying shastras, then one will be able to control. It's a lifetime project, or it could be lifetimes project, right? So, but this is what our scriptures are teaching us. This is what Bhagavad Gita is teaching. This is what Bhagavatam is teaching. And they are teaching not only the ways of controlling lust, they're also giving the case studies or histories or stories of several people who have ruined their lives or because of so much of indulgence in sense gratification, undue and unrestricted. So these are a few thoughts about this topic and this this shloka. So if I said anything heavy or inappropriate, I'm really sorry. So many devotees may be here, 68 devotees I get to see. So, but I just shared my reflections on the shloka. So thank you all very much. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. It's 6:45 now.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam. Our glory is Srila Prabhupada. What a wonderful class, Prabhu. Thank you for covering this subject matter so nicely through shastras and through quoting various verses. Just one doubt I have that, you know, when you were telling that, you know, the human consciousness is little elevated, they are less lusty because the progeny is less. So in this regard, I just want to ask that, yes, do agree that the progeny is less, you know, once in a year, you can say. But isn't it the nature of human is much more lusty as compared to the animals? Like, even if you don't compare it to the sexual part, even lust can just not be considered to be sexual. Lust can be desiring for anything, like for material, prestige, fame, and so forth. So even, isn't it that humans are much more lusty? Like, if you can just throw light on this. Thank you, Prabhu.
Yes, they are much more passionate. But conditioned human beings are like that. Those human beings who are in certain Vedic culture, certain restrictions, they are quite mature in terms of restricting their lust, because in certain social circles, now animals just wander naked, and insects, they don't have all these restrictions and rules. They are just, when as soon as there is some kind of stimuli, they would immediately respond to that stimuli. So that's how they operate. But human beings are not that. So it's there, the desires may be there very much within the mind, within the heart, within the intelligence, within the senses, but the opportunity that they have to express it is very minimal. That way there is a natural restriction on a human being's lust or passion, right, naturally. But from another perspective, because human being is more intelligent, he will find more and more avenues to fulfill one's sense gratificatory desires, but animals or lower non-human species do not have that much intelligence to have some shortcuts. So naturally, whatever is available for them, they are just satisfied. But whatever is available for them naturally itself is a lot, right? So that's why human life is very rare and very elevated. So scriptures say this. And from human life only one will be able to transcend this material world. So now animals cannot study shastras, animal cannot chant, animal cannot align with their with the scriptural prescriptions and prohibitions, right? That a human being is quite elevated. So even if they have so many unlimited, unrestricted sense gratificatory thoughts and all that, because of the society, because of the public, because of certain culture and certain norms that are there in human society, certain systems are in place, they won't be able to exercise it or express it. Restriction is very natural there. And if somebody is like too much into that, in doing in things in a forbidden way, they will definitely be given an opportunity to exercise all of that in the next life as non-human species, dogs or cats or trees or insects or snakes or whatever.
Yes, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you for answering it so beautifully. Just one comment, maybe you can answer it offline if possible. You know, the 10 stages you were telling, starting from eyes, and you were quoting one verse from 10:40 to 14. The 10 stages, I was not in a chance to get to read the purport. So the 10 stages are described in the purport itself, or it's somewhere else that you were quoting from?
It's there only. I read there only. Okay. Only the Sanskrit phrase is given and the translations are given. Good that you reminded that. Very important point. These 10 stages are 10 stages of Cupid. But these, out of 10, the first 9 can happen to devotees in their attraction towards Krishna. First is Chakshuraga. Devotees see the beautiful form of Krishna, they get attracted. Chitta Sangha. By seeing the beautiful deity of Krishna, devotees meditate on it, and within the mind they get attached to Krishna. And Chakshuraga, Chitta Sangha, then Sankalpa, and they develop a determined desire to serve Krishna. So like that happens. The last stage of death will not happen, but the first 9 stages can happen to devotees also.
Yeah.
In their love towards Krishna. So these 9 stages of Cupid, we can convert into our 9 stages of attraction towards Krishna.
Yes, Prabhu. Prabhupada's philosophy dovetail everything. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you so much for coming on the call and giving your wonderful association. Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Dhanvat Pranam. Prabhu, I had a question. When we are in Krishna consciousness, we say Krishna consciousness is independent of even mode of goodness. So how do we understand that? Is it above mode of goodness? When we are in Krishna consciousness. So how is Krishna consciousness independent of mode of goodness?
Okay, got it. So basically in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, our Kapiladev says this, that bhakti is always beyond the material modes. But the performer of bhakti could be influenced by certain modes. So in the third canto of Bhagavatam, 29th chapter, there are a series of verses that describe tamasic bhakti, rajasic bhakti, sattvic bhakti, and nirguna bhakti. Nirguna bhakti is madguna srutimatrena mahisala guhashaye manogitravichinna yatha gangambha sambhudav. As soon as a devotee hears a slight description of Krishna's qualities, the mind of the devotee will just run towards Krishna, just like Ganges goes towards the ocean. But the other three categories of bhakti, right? Tamasic, rajasic, and it's not, bhakti is not tamasic, bhakti is not rajasic, bhakti is not sattvic. But the performer of bhakti, a devotee who is trying to practice bhakti, he could have certain revengeful thoughts. So he could be a ignorant bhakta, or what is that? His bhakti may be in ignorance or passion. So there are certain qualities that are mentioned there. And other categories Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, Artho Jignasar Artharthi Gnani Cha Bharatarshabha. Right? Some people may want money, so that's why they worship Krishna. Some people may want some relief from material distress, that's why they worship Krishna. Liberation seekers are in mode of goodness. Right? So like that, the performer could be in different modes, but whatever may be the background, if the performer of bhakti continues to perform bhakti, the impurities will be gone, will be retained. Sattvic bhakti. Sattvic will be gone, bhakti will be retained. Rajasic bhakti. Rajasa will gone, bhakti will be retained. Sakama bhakti. Bhakti will remain by Krishna's grace. So a Sakama bhakta is a Sakama bhakta only in name, because if it has bhakti, even with kama, with desires, material desires, Krishna will remove those material desires. Dhruva started his bhakti with a lot of material desires. A great material ambition to become the wealthiest person and the most popular person in the entire universe, even beyond Brahma. But within 6 months, there is a change. Right? There is a change, and Dhruva even regretted that, oh, why did I have this kind of material desire? Huh? That's why Bhagavatam says, akama kamova moksha kama udaradhi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha param. So akama sarva kamova moksha kama udaradhi. Whether you have akama, no desires, sarva kamova, all kinds of desires, moksha kama means desiring liberation, whoever you may be, you can practice bhakti. So bhakti is definitely beyond all modes. Bhakti is not dependent on any modes, but to be in mode of goodness facilitates our practice of bhakti better. Right? A person who is in mode of goodness is a little sober and clean. So that cleanliness facilitates, means supports bhakti. They are favorable. So favorable mode is mode of goodness, but one has to ultimately transcend the mode of goodness also. The 11th canto of Bhagavatam, this analogy is given. For an airplane to take off, it has to come on the runway and then just move there for a while, and then it can take off. For us to transcend modes, first we have to come on mode of goodness, and then we can transcend that way. That way mode of goodness is favorable. That's why we say we have to cultivate mode of goodness. But bhakti is beyond mode of goodness also, mode of beyond all modes. And our ultimate aspiration too is to perform bhakti, which is beyond modes, nirguna bhakti. But while practicing, now, in the practicing stage, there could be so many other desires or thoughts or immaturities, etc. Slowly they will go away if you continue to chant. Make sense, Mataji?
Yes, Prabhu. So, should we understand, like in ISKCON, like Maharaj level people, they have risen above that, above the three modes?
Like, I good.
So in Krishna consciousness, like we are saying, they have risen above the three modes. So in ISKCON, if I see, maybe so the people who are at Maharaj level, they have risen above this. That's true. In bhakti. That's what we.
Yeah, there could be many other devotees also who are pure devotees. All glories to all devotees.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. You are in the beginning mentioning that, depending upon the nature of the soul, they would look for the appropriate parents, or because depending upon the consciousness of the parent when while the child is conceived, the nature of the child is defined. So how do we understand here, you know, Prahlad Maharaj being born out of Hiranyakashipu, who was a demon, and Prahlad Maharaj was a devotee?
So some people give an explanation that some parrot came and started singing the names of Hari Hari, and Hiranyakashipu was a little distracted from his austerities, and he came back to Kayadu, and then Prahlad was conceived, and then something, some people say that, I don't remember reading it somewhere, but I heard like that. But it's a general rule, but different people can take birth through different means, through different parents, for different purposes also. So it's generally it happens like that, but there are always certain exceptions in the case of great souls. Right? So Prahlad's birth, some explanation is given, right, which I didn't read, but I have heard from some people.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. I just have one small question. You had mentioned, I missed part of what you said about the connection between worshipping Madan Mohan and at the beginning of your bhakti, and yes, I just missed part of what you said. Do you mind repeating?
Prabhupada says that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila, first chapter, when Kaviraj Goswami writes this Pranati Mantras, Jayatam Sarvatav Pangor Mamamanda Matirgati Matsarvasva Padam Bhojav Radha Madana Mohano. So when Kaviraj Goswami is speaking all these mantras, Prabhupada writes that Madan Mohan is our Sambandha Vigraha. In the beginning stages of devotional service, one worships the Lord, right? He's Madana Mohana. He enchants even Cupid also. So like that.
Okay. Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, I have a question actually, not relating to today's topic, but from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto. Is it okay, Prabhu, if I can ask this question? Prabhu, in the Chatushloki, when Brahmaji is asking for question to the Supreme Lord, at the fourth question, he is asking for benediction, mercy, that he should not have pride or bondage. But Prabhu, when we go to the 10th canto, when Brahmaji, he kidnapped all the cowherd boys and the calves. So it was due to like pride. So how can like the benediction fail?
Quoting 10th canto, you would have quoted 11th canto. Okay, sorry. I'll speak both. So Brahma offered this prayer. May I not have any pride or passion. Even in 3rd canto, 5th chapter also, 9th chapter also, the Lord gives benediction, you will never be affected by passion. In the 8th chapter, Brahma offers prayer also. In the 9th chapter of 3rd canto, Brahma offers prayer. May I do my service properly, may I not be affected by mode of passion and all that. But point here is, in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, we see that four Kumaras, Brahma's sons, ask the question to Brahma. And Brahma could not answer that question. So their acharyas write that Brahma could not answer the question because he was affected by his own creative activities. So he was so much absorbed in creation, lot of management and all that. So he could not properly answer the question of the four Kumaras. So, and they also quote this prayer of Brahma that he offered in the beginning. In the second chapter, second canto, Brahma says, Na bharati menga mrushopalakshate navai kvachinme manaso mrushagati name hrishikani patanti asakpathe yanme hridi autkanthyavata dhruto hari. So whatever I say will never be wrong. Whatever I do will never be wrong. Whatever I think can never go wrong because yanme hridi autkanthyavata dhruto hari. I have accepted the lotus feet of Lord Krishna with great zeal and determination within my heart. So, the point here is, whenever somebody is in such good consciousness of subordination to Krishna, service attitude towards Krishna, whatever they say, whatever they do will not go wrong. Right? They can never do a mistake. But because of prolonged engagement in material activities, one could get distracted for a while. One could become little, deviated from the right consciousness. Then the Lord has to come and rectify. Okay. So that's the point. But specifically towards Brahma Vimohana Leela, 10.14 that you were quoting. So Brahma Vimohana Leela, it is orchestrated by Yoga Maya. Okay. And definitely, Brahma was offering this prayer, oh my dear Lord, I am very sorry, please forgive me, I did a great mistake. So now we need to understand that even great demigods at the level of Brahma also could become distracted, could commit some mistakes. That's the main lesson there. Even if they had the background of offering prayer and getting benediction and all that. For example, Dhruva Maharaj got into the process of killing so many yakshas for one yakshas mistake, atirosha, excessive anger. Then Swayambhuvana has to come and then stop him. Please don't do this. So sometimes even exalted souls also may get a little distracted. So that is not an opportunity or a chance for us to minimize their position or look down upon them. That's very important for us to understand that if such great people could get distracted, I could also get distracted. So I should be very careful in my devotional service. So when we see great souls doing mistakes, we should remember three things. Prabhupada gives three formulas. In the third canto of Bhagavatam, 12th chapter. Okay. First, see the mistake as a mistake. Even if a great person does it, mistake is mistake. We should not lose discrimination. Oh, maybe he's doing, that's why it's bona fide. We should not think like that. Second point, don't disrespect the devotee. Don't forget all the glorious service that the devotee has done. Just because he has done some one mistake, you can't just discount all the great things that the devotee has done. Okay, maybe Brahma Mohan Lila is just a little bit. It's just 1 year only. For Brahma's perspective, it's only one moment. But beyond that one moment, Brahma is doing so much glorious service. Okay, we should not disrespect the devotee. Third point, if such a great devotee can get distracted, I could also get distracted. So I should be very careful in my execution of devotional service. So that's the... So the Lord also will not take incidental, unintentional mistakes of his devotees very seriously. Right? So he will forgive them. He may disapprove the mistakes, but he doesn't disown the devotee. Right? Like that. Similarly, we may disagree with the activity of the devotee, but we should not disrespect the devotee. Okay. Makes sense, Prabhu?
Ji, Prabhuji. Thank you so much, Prabhu. And Prabhu, I think so there are many hand raised, but just one small thing. Prabhu, if there is any question, like if I have, because I'm actually following your book, Bhagavat Subodhini, and the Bhagavat Prabhava that you gave classes at Hare Krishna TV. So if I have some question, Prabhu, is it possible I can ask? How is it possible, Prabhu, I can ask you?
Yeah, you can send an email, send email whenever I have time. I just
Okay. Thank you, Prabhu.
Yeah, Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam, August, Srila Prabhupada. Amazing class, Prabhuji, this morning. Thank you so much. We have four hands raised. Do you have time?
Okay. You can take one question.
Okay.
We can choose who can ask.
It's hard, Prabhu. I think Kadamapriya Prabhu. Sudhakar, Shyam Sudhakar Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. Hare Krishna Prabhu, Dandat Pranam, please accept. That's very, very negative for you. I want to make it quick. Maybe the question is long. You said that lust stays in mind. Intelligence and senses also, right? And it's being scripturally referred that it should start in order to conquer the lust. The senses are the first one to come. So does it mean that if we conquer the mind, so that is the final stage that we have? We can say that a person who has conquered the mind is conquered the lust. Or it should be the balance of all the three constantly should be.
Basically, now this mind is material, senses are material, intelligence is material. So we need to engage ourselves in spiritual activities. So on our own, we may not be able to control all these distractions or material desires. But all we can do is engage the senses, mind and intelligence in Krishna's service. So now, in the fifth canto, first chapter only, in one purport, Prabhupada writes how to spiritualize one's body. Bodies are two, gross body and subtle body. So one can spiritualize them. So when a devotee takes initiation from a bona fide Vaishnava guru, what happens is the devotee expresses his willingness to follow the instructions of spiritual master, and he engages his senses in spiritual activities. So the senses are engaged in spiritual activities. So it's as good as a spiritual body in one sense, but it's just a matter of time before one attains a spiritual body. But actually this gross body is just following the dictations of the subtle body within. And the subtle body has three elements. man, buddhi, ahankar. Right? Ahankar is the false ego, false identification. So by taking initiation from a guru, following the instructions of guru, a devotee or a disciple identifies oneself as a servant of Krishna, not as master, controller, proprietor, enjoyer, creator, maintainer, leader, etc. Servant of Krishna. Identity is spiritualized. Second, intelligence. By studying Shastra, by contemplating on Shastra, one's intelligence becomes spiritualized. By engaging one's mind's functions, thinking, feeling, and willing in connection with Krishna, by remembering Krishna's pastimes, by remembering Krishna's name, by chanting the holy names, one's mind becomes spiritualized. When the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego, when they are purified, when they are spiritualized, whatever the subtle body is making the gross body do will also be a spiritual activity. Thus, the gross body becomes spiritual activity, spiritualized. Subtle body becomes spiritualized, right? So, subtle body is getting spiritualized day by day. And the gross body is following the dictates of subtle body and getting engaged in spiritual activities with his gross senses. And it just takes a matter of little bit of time before we attain a proper spiritual body to serve Krishna. So, this is the main focus, right? Instead of separately endeavoring to control the mind or intelligence or false ego or senses or lust or material desires, one has to channelize all one's energies or propensities towards rendering service to Guru, Krishna and Vaishnavas. That will take care of the other things. So now Prabhupada writes in the 4th canto, 22nd chapter, I think 39th purport, Yat pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya karmashayam grathitam udgrathayanti santaha. In that purport, Prabhupada writes, our desires, our lusty desires are like ripples on a river. Now, do you ever see ripples on a river stopping? On a flowing river, there are always ripples. They will never stop. Similarly, our sense gratificatory desires, material desires will never stop. Okay. But when the river meets the ocean, the tides, the high waves of the ocean will overwhelm these insignificant ripples of the river. So when river goes to the ocean, now do you see river's ripples or ocean's waves? They become more prominent, right? And that ocean is compared to Guru. And the waves of that ocean are compared to the plans of Guru to render service to Krishna. So when a disciple dovetails his propensities or his desires or his activities towards the instructions of Guru, the ripples of devotees, disciples' material desires will go in the background, and the tides of the Guru's plans to render service to Krishna will take over. So that's the way of controlling mind and senses and lust and material desires. So basically, we need to take shelter of a bona fide Guru and render service to Krishna under the guidance of the Guru, then all these things will go away. We don't have to separately endeavor for controlling all this. Does it make sense, Prabhu? Whoever has
thank you so much, Prabhuji. That answers my question. Thank you so much. Hare,
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Somebody, saying in the chat that why devotees' children are not becoming devotee, and examples are given Advaita Acharya, Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the question is it totally the consciousness of parents when they...
There could be hundreds of other factors. We are not completely sure. But upbringing matters, the kind of impressions that... the children get while growing, they may see different things, not only from parents, from outside world also. So now the birth from certain parents could be according to one's past, karma or some kind of fruitive baggage. But after taking birth, they're exposed to different environment, right? So in that environment, they may create more and more newer impressions. So this combined with their past impressions, current impressions, anything can happen. So we cannot always exactly say this is the reason. There could be multiple reasons. And of course, I'm also not very expert in that area. So you can consult some other experienced devotee. That.
Yeah. Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you.
Thank you, Hare Krishna. We'll conclude here. 7:30.
Yes, yes, Prabhuji. Let's hear. Yeah, thank you so much, Prabhuji. We are very, very grateful to you for coming on the call and giving your valuable time and association. Let's pay our obeisances to Prabhuji. Vancha Kalpatarubhyasya Krupa Sindhu Devachya Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai His Grace Gauranga Darshan Prabhuji Ki Jai.